Hey guys, how's it going? Can you hear me?
What's up?
Cool. Where are your shell labs? Are you guys like really sad that we're done with shell lab now?
I don't ever want to hear the word shell lab again.
You're probably gonna miss shell lab when you get into OS.
I don't want to hear that.
I don't know, maybe that's not true. David, do you think that that's true? I was so scarred by shell lab that I did all my OS programming in Java, which was rough. I think it's much easier if you go ahead and do that and see.
Roger that.
I think I have responded to anyone who sent me an email about shell lab stuff. So if I haven't, just maybe ping me again. But I think the majority of you are done and can put it behind you. And I know that that feels pretty good. Some people like shell lab. It's true. I don't know. I know, David, you kind of liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Yeah. I require things to be turned into games and spoon-fed to me like a small baby. So it's tough. Somebody in the other section mentioned like what they didn't like about Shell Lab was that we don't, in a lot of our other labs, we kind of like walk you through a little bit more. And in Shell Lab, it's a little bit more open. So figuring out what to do next and where to go once you get eval done is a little bit tricky because it seems very foreign, but that's actually kind of purposeful because that's more of a real world scenario than, you know, getting a lab handout and being told now try this and now do this and so on and so forth. So, you know, that's the only little bit of coding we make you do, but that is often what programming is like, as I'm sure you are aware. Although I know in Java 1 and even 2, like you're still kind of like walked through a lot of stuff, and then that kind of stops in data structures, and you won't get that anymore. So we're done with the walking through of any kind of programs this is what it's going to be from now on. So get more comfortable with that if you want to be good at that thing, and it'll be easier. It'll become easier, like anything else. Does anybody else have any feedback about Shell Lab or things that like you wish were different or that you liked or didn't like? You have anything else to add to that? It seems like a big pain in the butt, and I'm sure it's like not super clear like why we make you do that thing to learn these concepts, but like, and we keep saying this, I know it'll, once you get into OS it will be clear and you'll probably be a little bit grateful for it, because it is a, even though it's kind of a tough love way to get you used to some of those concepts and programming some of that stuff, it does help with that. So it's not like you're just thrown into like cold water once you get to OS. And OS is tough. It's a bear. I don't know why people don't talk about OS as much as they talk about like databases and even like systems to some extent. Like systems, I feel like, is your first like work intensive. I mean, this semester is a little bit weird, but usually we're one of the first classes people have where the deadlines are like strict deadlines. but the rest of your classes in general will not be as hand-holdy as those first couple of semesters. So we're trying, even though, like I said, it's tough love, we're trying to help. But if you have any suggestions, or if you think there's things like, if there's something that you really struggled with and you're like, I can think of a way that I think that this could be done better, or in the future, if you guys would like do this thing and like let people know this in advance, or maybe add this to the handout or to the slide hints, like we definitely take all of that into consideration, and we really appreciate any feedback on stuff like that. Cause we are, even though we want it to be challenging, we don't want it to feel like insurmountable. And I know sometimes, like, especially with this lab, it may have felt that way.
You want some feedback?
Yeah.
Right
totally.
Now? Right now?
Yeah. Yes. Give it.
Yeah. The only thing that I struggled with initially was just like, and I mean, this was expressed in the Slack feed for anyone who wrote that channel between Matt and I, but it was just like how signals worked, I guess, across processes. Like my understanding based on the reading and the class was like all signals were handled within the parent process, which like totally wrecked my ability to do that part initially.
Yeah.
And as soon as I realized that, like I thought Shell Lab was like simple. So, you know, I think just getting hung up on minor conceptual details like that aren't necessarily like parsed out in the book or in lecture. But I mean, of course, too, it's our job to express like maybe that. And I think people are reluctant to express like questions in the Slack feed and maybe outside of office hours. I don't know what goes on in office hours, but.
Yeah, I've actually noticed that. So I have not taught this course before, like on my own with my own section, but I have run, we tried it one semester where we set it up and it was like two lectures and a full on like lab course. So we did any activity that we do in class, we just did it on our Friday lab. And I had a section, and I think my section got a lot more out of it than the other section because they were constantly asking questions. And I do try to work really hard to like make you guys feel like you should feel like this is a safe space to ask questions. Like I will never be a person who judges you for not knowing something. Like I'm a person who would still raise their hand and be like, wait, but can you like re-explain to me exactly what a server is? Like it's this like inability to, and I had the same thing, especially like coming up in the program and feeling a little bit underrepresented and like wanting to prove myself, like I was afraid to ask questions. And there were always people in my classes who I felt like somehow like already knew it, like everything. And there are certainly people who are just interested in computers in a way that I wasn't. And so they just knew more because it was their, like, they enjoyed learning about it. They did it on their own. And I was in school learning about it and I just didn't know anything.
Yeah, you do a really good job with that, Caitlin. I appreciate that.
I really appreciate that, actually, because I do try. Like, I will break things down as much as I can. If I don't know the answer to something, I'm 100% willing to be like, I actually don't know, but I will check on that for you, and I'll get an answer for you. So I'm glad that you said that. Like, I really try to, and I really hope that, like, you guys feel safe asking questions and don't feel like anybody's going to be like, oh, how do you not know that yet? Like, even there were people who I have talked to, like even this week, who are like, listen, I know this is bad, but I'm like, I'm still in eval and I don't know what's going on. I'm like, it's fine. Like, let's just get you to a point. Like, that does not matter. Like, what matters is like you getting to a point where you feel good about this and like where you feel good about this or in a way that it isn't like a traumatic experience for you and you can take something out of it. And even if like coding is what's holding you back, conceptually, you're able to take this stuff and on the final, like know how to deal with it. So that being said, Shell Lab is in the rearview mirror. That's great for everyone, I think, because the rest of the semester in systems will be a little bit lighter. And I think a little bit more fun because we get to go back to those like kind of attack lab is the same kind of thing as like bomb lab. Usually attack lab and bomb lab are back to back. We break it up like this, like I said, because doing Shell Lab at the very end of the semester can be a mistake, which is when it's normally done. And it seems a little bit easier to like return to the chapter 3 stuff that we didn't get to when we were looking at bomb lab and do our attack lab at the end. So we're gonna, like, on Friday we'll start looking a lot more at the stack and how system calls work and all of that stuff. So hopefully, if you are just over all of this, like, you know, forking and process stuff. I mean, the process stuff is actually, like, I love the concept of Shell Lab. I love it. Like, I think it's really cool stuff. I still hate coding. I still don't like coding Shell Lab. And I think, like, if that is where you are too, that's totally fine. No one expects you to, like, love every part of all of this. But the Attack Lab stuff is fun. It's cool. You get to, like, we get to, like, try to break things. And I think there's no, like, there's no write-up. Like, you don't have to turn any anything besides, like, what you use to break the buffer or whatever, how you exploited this vulnerability, which will just be, like, literally what you put into, like, the command line. So that's great for our last lab. That gives us, like, a lot of time to work with that, have fun, review for final. And I think that'll be nice for you guys too, as I've said. Does anybody else have anything to add? No, we're good. Okay, cool. So let's see. Okay, so we're gonna wrap up today, chapters 9 and 10. So we've been talking obviously a lot about memory and how we utilize memory and how we deal with this dilemma of, like, wanting our processing speed to be really fast and still be able to utilize this slower, like, less expensive memory. And I just want to, like, kind of, because we're wrapping up, like, pull up a few reminder slides. So okay, so just so we get a chance, like, just so it's fresh in everybody's brain, like, let's remember what this graph looks like. So when we started looking at the memory hierarchy, we looked at this graph so we could see the difference between the speeds of these different devices and the different places that we're going to be accessing memory from. And, like, started to kind of get a feel for why we utilize things like caching and why that's effective. So we have looked at some caching here. We're now looking at some caching between, like, DRAM and disk when we look at virtual memory. There was a couple other things I wanted to just touch on before we move back into the chapter 10 slides. Maybe I won't be able to find it. So here's our handy pyramid again. Like I said, right now we're looking at things that happen between main memory and disk. So we're down here, whereas we started up in this area with caching. Conceptually, like, we're looking at the same kind of stuff. It's just happening in a different part of this memory hierarchy, right? So it has to be a little bit different. I also want to refresh you just on this stuff, because we're going to be talking about, we have, like, the TLB that we're going to introduce today, which is going to help us with some of our, like, page table stuff. So just remember, the TLB also lives on chip. So it's a hardware device and has no latency. It's very, very fast, just like our registers. Okay, so that is all we need from those slides. Let's go ahead and pull back to chapter 10. Where are we? Page fault. Does anybody have any questions so far about like virtual memory and how this is working and looking at like the page table? Is this allocating yet? Okay. So we know that we have, let's just refresh really fast because we have plenty of time. We always get through this stuff really quick. When we're looking at like our virtual memory, we are doing this like physical memory, this DRAM caching. So like I said, we're further down in that memory hierarchy. We're working with memory that's a little bit slower. So some things that come along with that are everything is slower, hits are slower, misses are way more expensive for us. So we have to like use a little bit different, we have to use different algorithms to like really kind of make that like the most efficient that it can. And that's where this this virtual memory and this paging comes in. So we utilize this data structure, this page table. The kernel maintains a page table for each running process. And the what's going to happen is you've got your MMU, your memory management unit, and when you need memory, the MMU is going to be what like translates that virtual address into a physical address. So it's going to check to see if that is already in like our is already cached for us, basically. Let's start here. So this might seem like it's super inefficient, right? So we're doing all of this, like all these checks for things. We're constantly having to look and see if like we've got a page table entry for something, if it's been allocated, if it's in our DRAM or if it's still on disk. We're doing tons of like checking and this seems like why would this actually save us time? But, you know, we've got this like reliable buddy locality, and because of locality, because of these like proven like fundamental concepts that things that we access like recently will likely be accessed again, and things that are close to each other in memory are likely to be accessed like close to each other in time. Because of those things, it actually works out that this is more efficient. So at any given point in time, programs or processes are going to access a set of active virtual pages that we're going to call the working set. And programs that have better temporal locality will have smaller working sets, right? Because if they're programmed in a way where things that are accessed, things that are accessed are then accessed again and again, you know, in close proximity of time, then they can have a smaller working set, right? They have to go look for other pages less often. So this is all good. Everything is like great if we have a working set for a process that's smaller than our main memory size. So if we can get all of our pages for our working set into our like DRAM memory here, that's great because we're not going to have any misses except for those initial misses when we're looking for something that just isn't cached yet. But as soon as we warm up that cache, like our working set is cached and we should not ever have to like go look for anything else, right? So that's ideal. That's great. There is another scenario. So if we have, if our working set sizes are greater than our main memory size, and that's for, you know, all the processes that are running, then we're going to have this thing that is called thrashing, which is basically when processes are like constantly overwriting each other's like, overwriting each other's like cached memory, and we keep having misses because we're constantly doing these like swaps and overwriting and passing things out and in. So that is a not ideal situation, but I think luckily that is a little bit more rare. So we have talked about virtual memory in terms of caching. Virtual memory is great for a lot of reasons. The next thing that we're going to talk about is it is a really useful tool for memory management. And we kind of touched on this a little bit. So each process, as you remember, has its own like view of memory, has its own virtual address space, and all of their virtual address spaces are the same. So they think of their memory as just some set of linear addresses, and they have no idea about the fact that like actually their memory is scattered all over the system, right? Or the data that they're using may be scattered all over our disk, so, or our DRAM. So this is great because this makes running processes and running processes at the same time really, really easy. It also is great because it makes our caching really, really flexible. So right here we have two processes, processes one and two. We've got virtual page one, which in the first process, which maps to physical page two in DRAM. Virtual page two maps to physical page six. And then in our second process, we've got one, which maps to eight, and two, which also maps to physical page six. And this is also really, really great. This is another great effect of virtual memory and memory management, is that if two processes are using the same thing, so let's say like libc or some system call, they can actually just use the same physical page from our cache. So even though they have different like virtual page, this in this case they have the same virtual page, but they could be different. They're going to point to the same physical page whenever they do those like system calls. This is also great because, as we'll see later on, we have these like this library stuff that we maybe want to be able to protect. And so having it all in one place makes it easy to protect. It makes it like really also like memory efficient to not have different copies of those libraries in different places in the RAM, right? That would be just redundant. Cool. So this is what we're talking about here. The sharing code and data among processes. I think this is basically the same slide. Let me make sure I've covered everything I want to cover here. Yeah, so also, let's say we have our first process and virtual page one is mapped at physical page two. Let's pretend at some point that like that doesn't get used for a while and it gets evicted and overwritten with some other physical page. And then virtual page one gets called in and they need to get that memory from disk back into our DRAM. Like that could go in any physical page now. It's really flexible. It doesn't have to go back into physical page two. It could go into anywhere else, which is great. That's also like helps to be very efficient. Another thing that it's going to do, it's also getting like warnings. I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on with my internet. And I keep getting warnings that connection on my screen, that my connection is unstable. So if I'm like garbled or you don't understand something, just like let me know and I'll repeat it. I know I also talk pretty quickly. So it's also going to really simplify linking and loading. So all of our processes are going to have this version of memory. So anything that's linked can get put into like the same place. Remember when we used the linker, we like saw all that long like command we had to put in IntroLab. Any kind of linking that happens, like all of this initial like, and the dot in there, the dot text, the dot RO data, like all of that stuff is going to go in the same place at the beginning of our process. And it doesn't have to like check and see where that is for each process, because every process has these same, like starts with these same memory addresses. And it's gonna potentially differ depending on your system, I think, or your OS. But for our purposes, like this is just what everything looks like. The stack will start at the same place. The heaps will start at the same place. Like this makes everything very, very easy. And then as far as like loading different programs, ExecVE is going to allocate virtual pages for .text and .data sections. And then it does this thing, it's kind of a little trick where it creates page table entries and marks them as invalid. So whenever we go to check to see if that page table entry is there, it sees that there's an entry, but that it's marked as invalid, and then it loads it from disk. So this also allows us to like load just sections of processes at a time as we like execute them, as we need their like data section. So if there's like some giant like array somewhere in memory that we're accessing and we only need like the first couple words of it, we're not going to have to load the entire thing into memory, right? Okay, so this is another thing that that virtual memory is very good for, that I kind of touched upon, but I didn't talk about at all, is for memory protection. So you can see here, we have all these different bits that will correspond to our virtual pages. Read and write, you're probably like familiar with. So if we're looking at that same, imagine these two processes, I and J, are like the same like one and two processes. And in physical page 6, we have like some code or some like library that we don't want to like be, we don't want that to change. Because you can imagine if like two processes are accessing the same memory block in DRAM, if they start writing changes, like that would obviously cause some issues. So we don't want to always be able to read and write to every part of memory. So we can mark things as read only. That way we're not like also overwriting code. We can like mark things as being able to like be written into for like data. And we also have a bit for, pardon me, executable. And you might be wondering why executable is important, or why you would ever need that or want that. And that's actually something that we're going to go into. That's like one of the important things that you'll get from Attack Lab, is that there are definitely parts of your process, and we look at like the stack, that you do not want to be executable because they can create like giant security vulnerabilities. So in Attack Lab, we'll exploit that, like being able to like have executable code places like in your stack. And so this protects against things like buffer overflow or rejection attacks. So executable is actually like a newer bit that is set. And then we have over on the very left, that bit, it's a supervisor bit. And basically what that does, and this is another part of memory protection, is there is going to be data that only the kernel should be able to access, not the user, or not certain processes. And so that will allow us to access code that we're allowed to access and not access code that should be kernel code only or kernel data only. So every time we go to do something with one of these like blocks of code, these bits, this like bit vector gets checked to see if we have actual permission for this stuff, and the MMEO is like what checks those bits. Okay, so let's talk about what happens when talk about the actual process of what happens whenever we have a page hit. So our CPU, and this is, you can see this is like a really nice diagram, because we have like what's happening on the chip and what happens like outside of the chip in memory. So the processor sends a virtual address to our MMU, and then the MMU will fetch that page table entry from the page table, which is in memory. So it already has to like go off chip into memory and check to see if that page table entry exists. In this case, it does. So that page table entry gets sent back, and then the MMU translates that into a physical address and asks for that physical address in cache, in memory, in this case in DRAM, and that data gets sent back to the CPU. So like a lot of stuff going on there. But this is still like pretty effective for us. So this becomes a little bit less effective whenever, I mean, obviously less effective whenever we have a miss or a page fault. So in this case, we're going to have the processor send the same thing at the start. The processor will send a virtual address to our memory management unit. We will look for that page table entry address in cache. It will get sent back, either it will get sent back as with an invalid bit, which means that that page table entry is invalid, it's not set, or it'll get sent back as being data that's currently allocated on disk. So now we have a miss, we have this, like we trigger an exception, a hardware exception. So we pass that off to the page fault handler. The page fault handler chooses which block of data in our DRAM is gonna get evicted. That gets sent back from our cache onto disk. And then we're going to pull our new data from disk into our cache. And then we'll have to, you know, remember that whenever the page fault handler runs, whenever that's finished and that new page is in cache now, that instruction that caused the exception gets run again. So we will again ask for that virtual address from MMU, and it'll start the same thing, but this time it'll be this situation. So here's another little diagram with an emphasis on like cache, and this kind of shows what happens in the cases of like both a hit and a miss. So this is another little diagram of that. And I don't know if this, this is a little bit, this is nice because it kind of combines those last two slides into one. So you can kind of follow the path of like either hit or miss in like different, this is like a choose your own adventure. CPU asking for a virtual address from MMU situation. So you guys can look a little bit more at that. I'm not going to run through every scenario. I think we've kind of done that on the last two slides. But this is also like a helpful, just like the main point here is these like excesses and being able to see like how much of this is happening. So this is pretty effective, having these like page table entries. They are cached in our level one cache like any other memory word. So we have to look for those. We have to look for these page table entries like in our cache, right? So level one, right? If we start at level zero, we're going to look for the page table entries in level one. In this case, that level one is like outside of our chip and outside of our chip. So it's off hardware, and they can also be evicted like any of the other data that we have. And there's still like a small delay whenever we go look for that stuff. So we at some point decided we wanted to find something that was a little bit more effective. And now we have a solution for this, which are these translation look-aside buffers, the TLB that we haven't talked about yet, but that was in that chart. These are a small set associated little hardware cache in MMU, and they will do that mapping, that virtual page number mapping for us. So it doesn't have to like live in that cache. So the TLB will actually contain the complete page table entries for like some small set of pages. So now when we look at this, if we have a hit, we don't have to like do that extra memory access where we had to look for a page table entry there. So this cuts down on an entire like memory access, which is great. So for a hit, we improve performance a little bit. Now we get to ask the MMU for virtual address. The MMU asks for that virtual page number from the TLB. It sends back the page table entry. Now the MMU can just ask Cache for that physical address and get that data sent back to the CPU. Great. When this becomes like really, really great is whenever we have, this will help us like have a lot less or a lot fewer misses too. And it also like improves our miss speed. So we just have less memory access than we have to in general. And you know, like it may not seem like a big deal, but as we talked about before, like when you're looking at like going from like DRAM to disk, this can be like 10,000 times slower. So even though we're dealing with like, you know, pieces of seconds, it adds up. So here in this case, we have the CPU asking for virtual address, the MMU asks for that page number from the TLB. That doesn't exist, so it still has to go and look for that page table entry in cache. The cache will, whenever the cache gives it back to the MMU, that page table entry gets shared between the MMU and the TLB. So now there is now also a copy of that page table entry in the TLB. So the next time the MMU asks for that, it won't miss right there. So then we have, then we're able to go back to memory for the physical address and we get that data from cache. Okay, so I think that is gonna wrap us up for virtual memory. Does anybody have questions?
I have a question, not related to this, but I was okay. Going to wait until help hours. It was about like the process graph and stuff. I don't need to ask it right now.
I mean, if you want to ask it now, there's a chance it'll help other people, and I have no problem going over process graph stuff because that will definitely be on your next test, aka your final.
Okay, let me pull it up. Then so I can't share my screen, but there was one part of the big process graph that we did in the signal activity that's really tripping me up because I don't understand why it is the way it is.
Okay. Let me pull it up. Hold on. Give me one sec. Okay, I think I have it. Yeah, cool, hold on.
All right. So, right after all these kill pids, it has a printf, but when I look at the code, in the actual for loop where it kills the PID, there's a printf statement immediately before that one. So why in the process graph is the printf statement after the kill PID?
That might be an error. That's a good question. I will admit that I did draw this, but I just copied it from an old solution. But let me think about this. So
I think it may be that the printfs are from the SIGINT handler, and there's the ones that are shown in the parent process aren't shown on the graph. No, they are. They are. Yeah, I see what you're saying now.
But yeah, we've got those guys, and we've got.
Yeah, I think those are out of order.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't see any reason why it wouldn't, right now, just looking at it, why it wouldn't, why this shouldn't come before that call to kill. So that's probably just an error.
Word.
Okay.
Are we gonna have a process graph like this on the final, or?
No. Well, here's the problem with talking about the final. We aren't going to be able to do an in-person final, obviously, right? So we've never had that situation before, and we are kind of talking about how that's going to work for us. So I want to say no, because I know what the previous versions of the final have been like, and they haven't had anything like that. In general, it'll be more like, do you remember that early process graph activity we did?
Yeah, it was...
with like the really simple code. It'll be more like something like that. Like we might have, you might have like things that fork multiple times, but it's not going to have like signals or things like that in it in general. So I want to say no. I don't know what we're going to do with our final right now and how we're going to run that and how we can like adjust for the fact that like we're not in a room with you guys and have less control over some of those variables. But in the past, and I don't believe for this test, we'll have anything that even comes close to the complexity of that process graph. That was, I think, a little bit more, like drawing out that process graph, I think should have helped show you guys like how like the signals and the that stuff kind of works in the flow of the program. So yeah, I wouldn't worry about like recreating something like that until Word. We tell you to, but for now, like, don't, like, you, it won't be anything that involves like this kind of like signal stuff.
Cool.
Any other questions? If you're done, you're also like welcome to like peace out and work on your own other stuff. But if you have other questions, like, I'm here till, you know, 12:50 or 1 or whatever, and I'm happy to like hang out and answer questions or just chat or whatever.
Heard that.
We will get a Tech Lab stuff out to you on Friday, and it'll be fun. It'll be like a nice break, I promise. It'll be kind of fun. I liked it.
So I don't know if this is actually a question, but maybe more a concern. I was really distracted on Monday for reasons kind of outside of my control. So maybe my ignorance is attributed to that. But, you know, a lot of this diagram stuff, this conceptual stuff is kind of reminding me where we're at with computer organization right now. It's just like super conceptual, a lot of like, you know, a lot of these ideas are illustrated via like these graphs, and I don't know. I just feel like I'm having I still feel as confident with it as I have with the other material that we've studied so far. And, you know, maybe I have some concerns about like, okay, how is this information going to be manifested on the test? But not really, that's not really my main concern, because like I actually do want to understand this. So maybe you can kind of like provide some guidance or suggestions on like on how to get more comfortable with this section.
So here's good news. First of all, we don't test you guys super deeply on this stuff. We will give you like a small, like a little bit of locality, like basically I think what we generally do is like a locality question and like a memory hierarchy question, and they're pretty basic. The majority of the final honestly is going to be Shell Lab stuff, and we do that for a few reasons, one of which is that like if people decide that like they just don't want to do shell lab, and they can take the grade hit and still pass the class. Because we think shell lab, because those concepts are so important to like your future computer science stuff, we try to prevent that by like forcing people to learn it for the final. And it makes it a lot harder to do it on the final if you haven't like done it at all with shell lab. So that is the majority of the final. I think over 50% will be shell lab, and then probably like 30% will be attack lab stuff, and then a little bit of like of memory hierarchy and things. The nice thing, like you just mentioned, actually, about this stuff, this like all of this memory stuff, and when we start talking about like where things are on your system and where they are like as far as like on the chip and like buses and stuff like that, we're not the class that goes in depth with that. So that is computer org and then OS. Computer org is going to go more into depth with the like actual hardware design and why it's laid out that way. And then OS is going to go very, very, very in depth with virtual memory and paging and like disk access and all of that kind of like reads and writes and all that stuff. David, do you have anything to add for that? Like if you're not understanding it, I guess what I would do, I think if you can, and sometimes I think maybe it's more helpful for people if they've sat in on my lecture to watch Matt's lecture, because then you're getting the information in a different way, or if they have sat in on Matt's lecture to maybe watch my lecture, so that you're getting that information like described to you a little bit differently. So you can try to go back and rewatch that lecture, those lectures. I know that's not that fun, but also like, if it seems like you don't understand it that in depth, it's probably because we're not giving it to you that in depth. Like that's probably part of it. We're giving you basically, you know, a 10,000 foot overview of these concepts right now.
And that makes me feel better. That answers my question, really. I just wanted to make sure I was missing something. It doesn't sound like it.
No, and even in the book, like they go more into depth, I think, they do go more into depth with this stuff than we do in the lecture, because they're going to bring in some of the algorithms, and how this stuff actually gets mapped, and we're not going to do any of that. So we're done. It is what it is. It's understanding what we want you to get from this is understanding why caching and locality work and why they're important and how they help us with that dilemma that we introduced at the beginning, as far as like utilizing the memory hierarchy and being able to like most efficiently use like these different speeds of memory, I think is like the most important stuff to take from it. And we will have a final review. So also it's going to be like the midterm where we pretty much are, you shouldn't have any real surprises on the final.